Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, and it's the Film Festival, a special monthly look at the greatest movies of all time from a geeky perspective. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt.
I love our monthly look at the best films ever, and it continues this time with All About Eve.
Yes, not the Three Faces of Eve, turns out.
No, so we had some confusion about that. I thought this would be the first time that you had seen a movie that I hadn't since Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, it's the first time neither of us have seen the movie that we're watching because I hadn't seen this either.
Yep. And every list you look at, All About Eve is on every one of these things. And in my head, I had completely conflated this with mandatory viewing I had in a psychology class in college called All About Eve, which was this, or no, sorry.
No, that was
the
Three
other
Faces
one,
of Eve.
Three Faces of Eve.
Again.
Which is this story about a split personality person and how they deal with it. And that is not this movie.
No.
Although.
This has got psychological elements to it, right? Like, and it's black and white, and it's got the name Eve. I can see why you have them confused in your head.
Yeah, I'm glad to get it all cleared up, though. So here's yet another movie I haven't seen. You also have not seen it. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, the experts seem to be unanimous in the idea that All About Eve should be on everyone's top 100. I have a lot of questions about its position, though. I don't need to know where it is on the list. I'm a little surprised it's on the list. And here's my thinking before we get too far. Every movie that we've seen that's super old up to this point, and by that I mean 40s, 50s, and it's been a fair handful of them, Casablanca, among others, they, even though, whether I'd seen them or not before, they all had some part of them that I found extremely relatable. Something like wartime stuff that I really get into and historical references that you'd see in Casablanca. Or in the case of Citizen Kane, there's this like existential, philosophical thing underpinning everything. And I completely kind of relate to that sort of thing. So I totally got into it. I could find that in just about everything we've seen. In All About Eve, I'm not really sure how to relate to it because all of it seemed just foreign and weird to me. And I'm curious at what your initial impressions were.
It's funny. Like I can see why I can see why it's considered a great movie. Bette Davis's performance is amazing. The story at its time is sensational.
Yeah.
You know, it's dealing with a deep psychological manipulator. There's a twist, which, you know, in our current M. Night Shyamalan soaked world is not as unforeseen as some twists. But again, I can see at the time, if you don't know anything going into this movie, you think Eve is just going to be a story about, you know, an aging actress breeding a young ingenue. And it turns out, no, it's not only that, but she's a liar from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that story is the story that you're supposed to look at and go, okay, that's the wartime or the history of the talkies or the, you know, that is the thing you're supposed to latch onto and say, ah, this elevates it. This makes it a great story. And you have these amazing performances. You have a Bette Davis, you know, sort of at the twilight of her prime, not the twilight of her career, but the, you know, like she may not be at the peak, but she's right up there.
Sure.
And still amazing and playing that aging starlet in an impressive way. It's also got camp. And I think that's another reason it's beloved, which may be something that you're like, nah, it's, you know, that doesn't really work for me. So I see in the movie why it's great.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the first ones I've seen that didn't continually captivate me. And there's something about the pacing that is of its time that things, I mean, Casablanca is my favorite movie of all time, but you know, other movies we've seen,
Rear Window,
from
for example,
stage, Sunset
something.
Boulevard, for instance,
yeah.
They kept pulling me through. Psycho kept pulling me through.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's bad of me. Maybe, you know, it shows that I'm too much of this modern generation that needs something in my face all the time. Mm-hmm. And I should learn to relax and soak in a good movie like this. But I'm not going to lie and say that I was riveted the whole time. This is the first time where I caught myself starting to drift while watching.
Yeah, I think you're right about a lot of what you just said. I think that I'm a spoiled genre film fan, and even when there's just bits of genre in my movies, I'm happier than when there's none. The twist and the ending and the lie and the deceit in this is interesting, but maybe I'm also a little jaded to the idea of, I mean, deceit is part of every movie now. Like, it's just, I don't know what that says about human beings and
I've been waiting for this to happen, actually, because we've talked about it in other movies like Citizen Kane, like Casablanca, where, like, this is so permeated culture. Isn't it unusual that we didn't look at it and feel it's tired? Maybe this is the first time where that happened, where the movie is great, mm-hmm. but it has so permeated culture and been, you know, parodied or had homages in so many different parts that we're not surprised by any particular aspect of it.
Maybe. What surprised me is how... I have this stereotype of that era, and I've talked about it before, where I think the acting is super over the top and super campy and very stage-like and, you know, all those things that I always complain about. But this is one of those movies where you are reminded that certainly some of these people, Betty Davis being one of them, was incredible in her time, like kind of had no equal. If she did, it was somebody like Joan Crawford, and in real life, those two hated each other, and there's a lot of story there, which is interesting. But that level of acting in its time is no better than this. Like, this is really good. And this had, what, first movie maybe ever? I don't think it's ever been top. First movie ever to get 4 Oscar nominations for female leads or for female actresses and no movie since, which is a pretty interesting bit of historic reference. But it's good that way. Like, the acting's really great. It's the world they inhabit where I was just like, it's just like floating around with a cigarette in your hand going, oh, darling, I'll be on stage for 4 weeks from now, our latest production of blah, blah, blah. And it's just that whole piece of business.
Yeah.
Just scrubs my cheese, man. I just can't. I immediately don't like anybody involved in that world because they're just so nose in the air. And it's such a stereotype. And I hate that. And I think I let that get to me.
Sure. I think it's on purpose in this movie, though. I think Margot, Betty Davis' character, is supposed to be over the top. She is an over the top character. They're saying, like, yes, the stars of this era were self-inflated and over dramatic and campy, because Anne Baxter, who plays Eve Harrington, her character is very demure. Yeah. Her character is not over the top, and her character is the villain. You just don't know it until later. But, you know, I think that It's understandable that having so much of the Betty Davis type character in here, including her husband and the writer, being in my opinion intentionally that way, could still rub you the wrong way. But I think it's motivated versus just like, oh, well, the whole movie was just campy from the beginning. I think they were trying to show a contrast, like these people are like that in the movie business. And they showed Eve Harrington not being like that to sort of distract you from thinking that she was actually part of that world too, when she is in fact the most manipulative.
Sure,
of all of them.
Sure. And it's another example of Joseph Mankiewicz, a production from him. He both wrote the screenplay and directed it. I would know him better from something like Cleopatra, which I have seen. Sure. His version of Julius Caesar is really cool. There's a few others.
You know, another interesting thing is that you bring up Mankiewicz, this is the first of the movies that we've seen that was an unqualified success critically and at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
The film earned $2.9 million at its release, which was a lot back in 1950. Came out on October 13th. Didn't have to have some pre-release that got recut. Didn't have any drama on the set. You know, about like, oh, we're going to rip it up and start all over again. I mean, there's some interesting casting stuff that happened that, you know, we could talk about. But mostly it's a movie that was shot normally, went well, did great at the box office and critics loved, you know, maybe that's part of the problem too, is you don't have any sense of anything else off screen happening around this either.
Yeah, it wasn't really controversial that I could find. I did a whole bunch of checking into this. There wasn't any real weirdness on set or any of that stuff. It was just like, here's your movie. It did really well. Critically, people liked it and audiences loved it. It's in your top 100. Boom.
The only thing that's controversial, and it's so subtle that I don't think it even plays anymore in our current society, is that Eve Harrington is a gay character, as is Addison DeWitt, who's played by George Sanders.
Right.
They're so unobviously gay because of the code of the time that you can hardly tell.
Right.
There's two scenes where they sort of do a giveaway with Eve. And then I think with Addison, it's more done by implication. And they make a point of sort of misdirecting you into thinking, well, maybe Addison and Eve are together, right? But the way they're together is not the way that they wanted the movie code to think they were together. So it can be read in a couple of different ways, but it doesn't feel that way now, but it was sort of groundbreaking at its time because in a world where you had to hide that about yourself, there were some signals being displayed on stage that woke you up. Sadly, Eve Harrington is portrayed as a manipulative, evil person, and Addison DeWitt, fairly manipulative and if not evil, certainly amoral himself.
Sure. I was going to say they got the raw end of that stick. If they were trying to break any ground, they kind of also...
Well, they broke the ground of actually even hinting at it. That's the only ground they really broke.
Yeah, and there was a bit of this in Sunset Boulevard. Rear Window had I don't mean the sexuality part, but just like poking at the code, you know, just saying psycho. Oh, certainly,
yeah, psycho for sure.
And I like that, and I usually can get a sense of it even when it's really old like this. I can go, see, that was a big deal at the time. That would have rocked a few people's world, and that would have been a hush-hush thing in Hollywood for a decade or whatever. This movie was hard for me to find that. And I'd forgotten about all of what you just said. I'd read it all before because I did some research in Wikipedia and a few other places, and it talks about that. And you know, yet still, it just kind of washed over me. And when I came out of it and the end of it was just, all right, rich, grumpy people getting usurped by deceitful other people who want to come in and steal their funk, and then at the end they're going to do the same thing. The next generation's coming in already. They're just the kind of people in real life I would loathe and not want to hang around.
Yeah. Well, and so it's not that it's not a good movie or not a good story.
No.
This is a story that you don't like.
Yeah. No. Maybe it's actually good in that regard because it made me really dislike these people, and in a way that was more than just because of their actions, it was because of their whole beings and how they behave and talk and act like they're, you know, the tip of the amazing end of the world and everyone else is less than them. And that kind of stuff, it rubs me wrong in real life. So it makes sense. It would probably rub me wrong here, but I don't like other movies like that either. Or not, I shouldn't say I don't like them as movies, but I don't like those kind of characters and in other things where somebody sort of plays, you know, uppity or, above everybody else, and it's kind of celebrated a little bit, and it becomes a key part of the story. Just not my bag of beans. And
you know, I think you can overdo it with the of its time, or you know, making excuses for things because of when they came out. But the one thing that does keep popping up in my head is we now live in a world where Game of Thrones and Westworld and Deadwood and such exist, where you know, Hollywood endings. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, criticisms of, you know, movies with their unrealistic plots and Hollywood endings was a real thing. I don't feel like most movies have that problem anymore. And yet in 1950, I think most movies were happy stories, you know, with unrealistic plot arcs and Hollywood endings. And All About Eve is not that.
Good transfer on iTunes, though, but I would just like to mention. It looked really nice. I don't know if it's been restored or what the deal is there, but that's where I ended up seeing it. And for the record, I hunted around. This was a fun discovery because you had said to me, "Hey, you got to buy it or rent it. It's not streaming anywhere." I'm like, "Okay, cool." And then I got to thinking, last time I watched something, I watched it on YouTube, and that was a painless buying experience. And maybe I'll try that again. And so I went and searched for it, and first thing came up was the rentable version of the movie. But mm-hmm. right below it, I see all these other things saying, full films, blah, 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 all this stuff. And I thought, how are they doing that? Like usual, YouTube, sometimes YouTube finds a way. So I just got curious. I ended up watching it on iTunes anyway. But I went into this YouTube one, and I'd never seen anybody do this before. Sometimes it'll be like a zoomed in view of the action, and yeah. the audio is turned way low or something, just to get past AI and, you know, not have everyone be the wiser. But that's not what this was. It was a lady, she's like a stock photo model with a remote in her hand, just smiling, kind of just a little bit sort of to the left of the screen. And to the right of the screen was like she was in the same room as this curved Samsung television. And so she thinks she was advertising a Samsung TV. And on the TV had been superimposed in a curved way, this film in its in its entirety. So from minute one to minute end, it was there. It was sped up a little bit because you know how they do that to get around it.
Yeah, right, right.
And it was there in full, and I kind of caught myself getting through it. And I'm like, wait a minute, I can't watch it all like this. This is the dumbest thing ever. So I flipped over, rented it on iTunes, and watched the rest of it there. But
that's crazy.
I just want to throw it out there because I didn't know that was a thing people were doing now to get around stuff. And somebody someplace is watching that movie and just
and
loving it.
And that's not the right way to watch
it. No, it's not. It is not the right way to watch it. It's like
now, I'm glad you brought that up. I actually bought it on Vudu, which is generally where I buy, and I wanted to own it, so I didn't rent it. I bought it. Mm-hmm. And generally I buy things on Vudu because I know they participate in Ultraviolet and Movies Anywhere. And I didn't even check. I just bought it thinking, well, I'll watch it in the Vudu app if nothing else, but it populated over to iTunes. So I actually watched the iTunes version too, even though I bought it on Vudu.
Oh, I didn't realize they had that kind of crossover. That's crazy.
Yeah. Anything that's in Movies Anywhere, any studio that is participating in Movies Anywhere, if you buy it on Vudu, it'll populate on iTunes. And same with iTunes. iTunes will populate to Vudu. You just got to connect all your accounts.
So when that happens, is the money split? Is that how that works? Just spreads it around?
Well, no. I mean, the money goes to the store that you buy it from and, of course, the studio. Yeah. I don't know if there's any other royalties on the back end. I think they just all do it to say, like, well, hey, if we get them to watch it on our platform, then they're more likely to buy from our store in the future.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, see, look, everybody's a little, I wouldn't call it tech news, but
welcome to Cord Killers.
A little, yeah. A little behind the scenes stuff in there.
You know, I wanted to bring up Thelma Ritter. I don't know that this is 100% true. I'm sure it's not, but it felt like Thelma Ritter was the first actress or actor to show up in two of the movies we've been watching.
Oh,
she played Birdie.
Yeah.
The woman who is the assistant of Margot at the beginning of the movie and is a little bit skeptical of Eve Harrington. And then she kind of gets shoved out. We don't see her in the second half of the movie, but she was also the nurse taking care of, Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window.
Oh, Stella.
Yeah, she's Stella in Rear Window.
1954 is Rear Window, which we've seen. That would have been 4 years later. She died 6 months before I was born, and reminds me to remind everyone here that everyone in All About Eve is not alive anymore. They're all dead.
Oh, right.
Yep. Not a soul. A single person
not a
on
single
screen.
Soul.
I looked wow. too.
Did
I went
you
and
look that up before you watch or after?
I watch it after. I look it up after.
Okay.
And so now it's kind of a thing, that. Right? I have to know now, so I do it.
Yeah,
and I do it with more modern ones just to see. It's like, I'm still around from 1974 or whatever thing. But yeah, none of these people. They're not there anymore. And she died in 1969. But anyway, no.
So you could be the reincarnation of Thelma Ritter.
For all I know, I've been Thelma Ritter my entire life and didn't know it. So it's entirely possible.
There's a little Thelma Ritter in all of this.
There might be. But she's great. And yeah, I think that constitutes our first crossover that I am.
Certainly for our first major character crossover.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been any. And she's a supporting character, but still.
Right. It's a smaller role in general, but she's great. She was in tons of stuff, like all kinds of movies. I bet she ends up.
I love her, too. Like, she's always the same person, yeah. pretty much, but she's always great.
I'm pretty
she's
sure Birdman from Alcatraz is on our list at some point. I could be wrong, yeah. but it seems like it is. She's in that. She's in a ton of Westerns. I don't know how many Westerns are on the top 100 to 200. But a bunch of those, like she got around. She was in a lot of good stuff.
She worked. She worked hard. She made a good living.
She got the job done.
Yeah. Speaking of supporting characters, how about Miss Caswell?
Yeah, she was good, right? You like her?
Marilyn Monroe's first gig.
Oh, it was her? I knew it was her early gig. I know it was her first gig.
That's well, crazy. I'm sure she had other screen gigs, but this is the first time that she appeared, in a role that she got credited for, not as an extra or something.
Oh, you're right. A bunch of stuff crammed into the late 40s, early 50s, but they were all very small and uncredited, like you said.
Relatively unknown at the time. Yeah. So maybe not considered her first role, but yeah. But it was, you know, she got some good screen time and I didn't feel like she was yet Marilyn Monroe quite yet.
You know, but isn't it
perky and bubbly?
Isn't it weird though to have her walk in and you hear her voice and immediately you're like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is future monster star Marilyn Monroe.
Exactly. And we don't get that. A lot of these stars like Humphrey Bogart and stuff, you never see them in bit parts ever. And it's kind of fun to not be able to take your eyes off that, knowing that when people went to the theater in 1950, it's all about Eve. Miss Caswell just fell off their radar. They didn't think about her again.
Very small part, you know, she didn't have a whole lot to say, but when she did.
Oh, she's the dumb blonde character. Mm-hmm. Got it.
She's
fine,
young. Oh, he's dating somebody super young.
I can
young.
Say that because I'm blonde.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah.
Shoot, I wish I was blonde because I may have made jokes before. But what was I just going to say about that? There's something over there that reminded me of it. Oh, I know what it was. I have a copy of a movie over there we just watched for Film Sack. It's so far from All About Eve, it's ridiculous, but it's Suburban Commando with Hulk Hogan. It's bad. It's a dumb, bad 80s movie. That's what we do on Film Sack. It is in the worst 100 movies probably ever made. But in that movie, there's a scene where a little girl can't get her cat out of a tree, and he has to help her get the cat, and he accidentally launches. He has superpowers. He's from space. He accidentally launches this little girl across the yard, and I thought, let's see who that girl is. And I went digging. Elizabeth Moss from Handmaid's Tale, West Wing, Mad Men, all, you know, her illustrious current career. And there she was in this as this horrible little thing. And that's what it reminds me of here. Like, there's no way, not that this is a bad movie for Marilyn Monroe to be in. But it is this moment of like, she's not even in the first credit roll. She's like way down the list. They just don't know what they've got yet. And she was about to become like enormous after this. And she did. And that was it. And nobody, you know, she might be the only person that may still be alive today had she lived. Had she survived, I have a feeling Marilyn Monroe would have been.
You mean if Marilyn Monroe wasn't dead, she'd be alive?
Well, she died in 62 at the very young age of 36 of drug overdose.
She was born in 1926.
Right.
So
what would that make her?
That would put her, she'd be up there.
She'd be in her
80s. It's not impossible that she could still be alive, but even now she'd.
She'd be, let's see, this would be about 10 years older than my mom. Well, she'd be in her 90s. You're right. We might be pushing it. But here's what you do, guys. Be like me. Have this dumb obsession about who's dead now in the movie, and then try to imagine the movie in your head, play it again, but the places where there would be people and talking and dialogue, green screen them out, and you just have a lot of awkward shots and pauses where nobody's saying anything. Now, preferably do this with a movie where a couple of the actors are still here, so that occasionally you have somebody
still show up.
Yeah, so talking to themselves. So once in a while, somebody will go, listen, I saw what happened there. What do you mean? And then he's quiet again, listening to nobody. Oh, it's such a cool idea.
You can digitally edit that. Yeah, it wouldn't be a green screen thing. It'd be a digital edit.
It'd be a lot of work, is what it would be. But no
scoping.
She's really good in it, though. Like, surprisingly good for such a tiny part, and deserves credit. In fact, isn't she one of the nominations? Now I gotta look again. I thought she was one of them.
Oh, I don't think so. No, it was such a bit part.
It was a pretty small part. Let's see, awards. Here we go. So it was
Anne Baxter had won the 1946 Academy Award already for The Razor's Edge.
Oh,
by the way,
she was a real Tom Hanks kind of double back to backer there. You got here are the winners that year. Best Picture, it won for that. Best Supporting Actor, George Sanders. Best Costume Design, Black and White. They had a color edition of that award as well back then. Best Director, Best Screenplay, both were won. and they won for best sound recording. Ann Baxter was nominated. And didn't
win. Celeste Holm and Thelma Ritter both nominated for supporting, and Ann Baxter and Betty Davis both nominated for leading.
Right.
I don't think we've had that where one movie had four nominees in those categories.
And if they did, it's definitely the first and only that I'm aware of that was all female and not a mix of. Well, I guess
Edith
that'd be.
Head is well known for costume design, and she won an Academy Award with Charles Lemaire for the costume design on this.
Now, at the Cannes Film Festival, Betty Davis won that award. They also won the Best Picture Award at that event, and then won about a whole bunch of stuff for Directors Guild, New York Film Critics Circle, all that stuff. I mean, the movie really killed it. Like, this would have been your big. I'm trying to think what you compare it to today. This is your, like, this is whatever. George Clooney did a few years ago or something, you know, like this is some big monster thing with a cast everyone loves. Like, it's your big marquee movie that everyone figured would win. And it literally did. But I think my favorite offshoot from it was something I haven't seen since 2008, which is when it came out. And because I hadn't seen All About Eve, I didn't really know what I was looking at, but there is an entire episode of The Simpsons called All About Lisa, mm-hmm. which is full of references for this. I actually went to try to find that. I couldn't find it anywhere to see it. Legally, so I didn't keep looking. But I thought that was pretty great. There's other examples of that. I found a whole bunch of things. Like, for example, there's an English rock band who named their band All About Eve. In season 3 of Gossip Girl, Enough About Eve is an episode that references it. There was an episode of The L Word, Glee, Will and Grace, Gilligan's Island even, that all dealt with this. So you can't deny the impression it made, dude. It made an impact and made a big old scar. It's just about people that I don't like.
Well, now, what do you think of the story? You've talked about how you don't like the people in it, and I get why that. But the story is about a young woman who at first appears to just be a shy fan. And yeah. In fact, at the beginning of the movie, I was like, well, this is a very modern, this would still be relevant today, fandom, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And the idea of stalking a star from a distance, right? You know, and she doesn't, you know, she doesn't push it at the beginning. And the idea of that fan, at first people sort of like, well, you can't really, you know, and then realizing, well, you're special, you're dedicated. We're gonna bring you backstage. And that sort of stuff still happens. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking like, well, you could really tell this story still today, the way it's told at the beginning. And then it starts to turn into a feel-good story where Eve is like, she's great. She's the best assistant ever, you know, and she takes care of everything, to the point where Margot starts to feel a little bit put off by it and a little bit jealous. And you think that Margot is the problem for a while. You think, oh, well, come on, Eve's just trying to help. And she's jealous because she's getting up there and she's petty. And then you start to learn, oh, no. Eve actually knows exactly what she's doing, and she is a great actress because she has played the part of an adoring fan. She has played the part of an amazing assistant. She has played the part of the injured party in that amazing scene with Celeste Holm, where they're in the bathroom and she just starts crying mm-hmm. and almost fools Karen mm-hmm. And then has to turn on her and become somebody else, to the point where you think she's going to get away with it. And in the end, George Sanders is the only person she couldn't fool. Mm-hmm. He's the movie critic, right? He's the acting critic. He sees through the performance because that's what he does for a living, is evaluate performances. And he applauds her, but he's like, uh-uh, I figured out who you are. Your whole backstory, only Thelma Ritter was right. Your whole backstory is crap. You made it up. You're not real. And if this comes out, you're ruined. So if you don't want it to come out, you're going to do what I say. And in the end, you know, pride goeth before a fall. Eve Harrington is left in thrall to Addison DeWitt, to the point where she says, I can't go on tonight. And he's like, no, you will, because I'm your boss now. Mm. I mean, that's a great story, right?
It's a good story. Yeah, I agree. I mean, today there would probably be a temptation today to make a little more Hand Rocks the Cradle sort of, you know, exploitative, maybe violent ends sort of stuff.
They'd turn up the violence and the sex levels a lot.
Yeah, sure. They absolutely would. But as a story, it's a fine structure and everything. You know what I think it is? That as you describe that, it occurs to me that maybe it's just I wasn't given anyone to root for. And I don't I don't know if I need that.
Well, you're supposed to root for Eve until you realize you're not supposed to, and then you're supposed to switch to rooting for Margot. But by that time, Margot's kind of irrelevant. So yeah.
Yeah, and you never really liked her anyway, so you're not really rooting for her. None of the men in this movie maybe want to root for them. Like, they all just kind of, if I knew them, I'd just be like, all right, I need a new career. I got to go somewhere else. I can't stand these people.
I rooted for Birdie, but then she was gone.
Yeah, and then she was out of there. Everybody roots for Birdie. But here's the equivalent today, or the thing today that somehow works. There are plenty of examples of modern entertainment films and television shows, especially, where they give me all kinds of reasons to root for terrible people in some cases. People like Walter White, most of the cast of Game of Thrones. Somehow, even though I think Jaime Lannister is abhorrent, I back him on a lot of stuff because there's also reasons to back him up.
Well, he wins you back over, right?
He does, yeah. And he shouldn't.
And Margot should be winning you back over when you realize that she was right about Eve.
Right.
Once she started to worry about it. But I guess she didn't do enough to win you over, huh?
She didn't. And I like Bette Davis a lot. I think she is super interesting.
Karen's someone you can root for, but then Karen makes the fatal mistake. And if there is a weakness in the plot, it's that Karen thinks that it'll just be a funny joke to pull out all the gas from the car and then doesn't live up to admitting to it at the time.
Yeah.
I was sitting there watching it and like, just tell her it was your fault while they're sitting in the car. If you tell her it's your fault right now, she'll be a little bit angry, but nothing that follows will be your fault anymore. You won't have leverage over you. Margot may still blame you. And I guess that's why Karen doesn't do it, because she knows that there's going to be fallout from this. But that's one thing I'm like, really? I just don't think Karen seems like such a sensible person. Why would she think like, here's a good funny joke and we'll all laugh about later. I'll make sure she misses her performance. That just seems extreme.
Yeah, I agree. That left me a little bit cold. I just wonder, like, we always, every week or every month, rather, we talk about whether or not this movie could ever see a remake. And I think it might, more than the others, because the others have qualities to them that feel so quintessentially theirs that if you try to remake it, you're just messing with fate and you could, you know, you're just asking for hate from the internet and everything else. But this feels like a movie you could probably remake and probably address my problems with it. And give me some characters to have a reason to root for here and there.
It's always dangerous, and we play this dangerous game every month. Mm-hmm. It's always dangerous to say you can improve a classic, right? Because it's dangerous to improve anything. But I think you might be right. Unlike Psycho, unlike a lot of the others that have been remade, Rear Window, I think you could retell. I don't think you remake. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't think you set it in the 50s or anything. I think you retell, because you could make the attraction between Eve and Margot overt. And I think that strengthens that. You could make Margot more sympathetic. You could make Eve even more sympathetic, I think, because I'm surprised you didn't like Eve and before you found out what was really going on.
I didn't. I thought she was mousy and annoying, and I don't know. I didn't feel bad for her. I didn't feel good for her. I just really kind of just felt nothing for her. I felt like I was watching some crafty filmmaking, and it was well made and good and acted. But I just, I don't know, character wise, I don't know why I'd want to ever be around these people, let alone be a fly on the wall for their story. And I mean, my favorite bit is the implication of this goes round and round
at the end.
Implication at the end. That's great. And that's it's a great reminder that after all of that, what did you really win? Like, what did you really get out of this? And it's like chasing the Joneses or keeping up with the Joneses or that the grass is always greener or, you know, a million other little things that we say to ourselves, reminding us that sometimes we just need to stop in the moment and appreciate what we have kind of thing. And this movie's great at illustrating that in the end. I wish there was more of that sense in it because,
it's good. A catty story.
Yeah.
It's basically showing like if you are pompous, you will be brought low by someone who wants to climb over your corpse to get to the top. Oh, and by the way, that person who climbed over your corpse to get to the top is got someone gunning for them too.
Yeah. I got some good news for you. If you really want to fill out your All About Eve playbook, there is a film in 2009 with a decent cast. Sandra Bullock. Let's see. What else is in this cast? Thomas Hayden Church, Bradley Cooper. This would have been kind of before Bradley Cooper was huge, I think. But anyway, it was called All About Steve.
Yeah, the comedy take on it. Yeah.
So there's that if you would like to, you know, hop in there and check that out. That won an award as well. It was the winner of two Golden Raspberry Awards and has a lifetime 7% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. So there you go.
Quite the legacy. Film sack. Coming
yeah, I always like look for the for these polar opposites. But to my point, if they remade this movie in a modern context, I might take it out of Hollywood and put it in a different industry, have it be climbing the corporate ladder, and even in the tech sector would be interesting. Some young scrappy programmer who works their way up to the top of some company and
it's the CEO of a company who's Margot, basically.
Yeah, who's kind of getting pushed to the side, isn't as sharp as he or she used to be.
That's interesting.
That could be an interesting, that's an interesting story to me. But also, maybe I'll have the same problems with it.
I think you have your pitch, Scott.
Yeah.
It's All About Eve meets The Color of Money. Or maybe Jerry Maguire. I don't know. But yeah, something like that.
Why not? But part of it is that I'm not sure I'd like even that. Because in the end, it's the same problem. I'm rooting for terrible people.
I think the problem isn't with the movie. I think you just don't like a catty story like this.
I think that's it.
Because this is a perfectly legitimate story, which is, hey, in a dog-eat-dog world, the dog eats the dog, but that dog still gets eaten.
Yeah.
That's kind of the story here.
But isn't it weird that you could tell
and
me...
And you're sitting there going, why do the dogs got to act like that?
I mean, what you could tell me, though, Tom, is you could say, hey, what if this was in space and the space pirate leader guy is getting a little long in the tooth and some young upstart in a little ship shows up one day and tells him a big story that's not true, but is kind of working his way into the gang. And now these space pirates are getting pretty close to being run by this other guy. Now, why is that interesting to me? Because it is. I would totally watch that. And it's just
space
catty. Because of space pirates, exactly. So that's what I'm getting at if you can do that.
You know what? That's the other thing. It's like, I don't think you like the catty story, which is totally fine.
Yeah.
It's a matter of taste. And you don't like the Hollywood oeuvre, right?
Yeah.
If you make them space pirates, then the fact that it's a catty story is not as big of a deal because space pirates. But if it's like, I don't like a catty story and I don't like, you know, like Hollywood drama, celebrity drama. And that's what this is. This is a tale of celebrity drama.
Mm-hmm. Like the least, ask me the top 10 things I don't want to do today. One of them would be watch Access Hollywood or spend any time on the Bravo Network or E or any of that. Like, I don't have any interest. I don't want to see the housewives of anywhere, be it Bel-Air.
Real or otherwise.
Real or otherwise. I don't care about that weird, catty, plastic, made-up world. It's just, and this is just a little piece of it, and I'm sure that there's examples others would use of things that I actually like that they don't, that they think have a structure that's, you know, super, just really grates on them or whatever. I think that's it. I think you summed it up. I don't like catty, petty stories.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, this is so petty. In the end, you're not going to... What are you getting? You're just getting some notoriety and some fame and, I guess, money. But none of those things are really that lasting. Like, it goes against my own value system is what it is. It makes me feel like I've seen enough of people, you know, having a bunch of money, then losing that money, then getting it back, then losing it again. And then during all of that process, their real relationships never really solidify. They don't really have a legacy of meaningfulness other than, you know, if cash isn't enough. And so I think it sounds like I'm on a soapbox. I'm not, I swear. I just, that kind of thing, I don't like it. Because it's just petty. It's like, well, all right, why don't you go do something else? Do something good with your life in your story.
Well, so this is where we bring in the sad truth that the story of All About Eve was based on the short story, The Wisdom of Eve, by Mary Orr, which is based on a real anecdote told to Mary Orr by actress Elizabeth Bergner, that while performing in the two Mrs. Carrolls in 1943 and 44, Bergner allowed a young fan, Martina Lawrence, to become part of her household and employed her as an assistant, and later regretted it when the woman attempted to undermine her. Bergner told Orr, who used it as the basis of the story, The Wisdom of Eve, the short story gives the girl a more ruthless character and lets her succeed in stealing the older actress's career. But it's essentially a more dramatized version of real events that are then further dramatized in the movie.
And maybe I'm getting a piece, maybe I'm getting a vibe off of that. Like, cause I would hate that to be a real life thing. It just sounds miserable and lame and awful to have somebody do that.
Yeah.
And I'm always very guarded about that kind of stuff in my own life. Like, I get real weird if somebody cozies up too much and I don't, and the dues haven't been paid for the friendship.
Yeah. Too soon, too fast.
Yeah. Too soon, too fast. And so I'm really wary of that. I think this is a me problem. Once again, it's not the movie. It deserves its place. Like, clearly it's a piece. It's a masterwork by those who made it and those who worked on it. But I don't have, I just don't have a love for the way the content plays out. So
the person who goes through and digitally takes out all of the dead people, if they could also just turn Betty Davis and Ann Baxter and George Sanders and Gary Merrill and Celeste Holm into space pirates, would that help?
It would help. Actually, you know what?
Put them all in space with spacesuits on.
Yeah, forget about removing them and having awkward silence and camera angles in an empty house. Forget about that party where nobody is because they're all dead. Let's just digitally take them all up into space and let's get our space pirate on.
Yeah.
Because that fixes a lot of things. As it turns
space
out.
About Eve.
Or all about
all
Eve.
About space pirates.
Eve is an AI, so it's E.V.E. And it stands for something, not the video game Eve, but something else. And
extra intelligent vehicular.
You just did it. Okay, here's the thing. The space pirate is undermined by this great new AI. They maybe stole it or they got it from the Federation or whatever they did. And this AI is awesome. And it's like, man, it sure is improving things around here, but it starts to improve a little too much. And before you know it, this thing kind of basically takes over and everyone's now taking orders from the ship.
It's the same story. You're right. That's great.
That's a great idea. That I'd watch. I would watch that because got all those trimmings.
And you know what fixes it for you is it's no longer a human that you have to feel disappointed in.
Yep.
That's undermining. It's it's the AI. What were we supposed to do?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Just technology out of control.
Yeah,
now.
And the AI is not. There's no reason for the AI to feel any guilt or to have 20 years of regret.
It was not programmed for morals.
No, it doesn't. I think that's it. We just got to the bottom of it. That's my problem. Is the moral degradation in trade for what? And in the end, it's just fluff and nothing. It means nothing. Because someone else is just going to do it to her.
Mankiewicz was alive today.
He could do it. He was a big budget guy by the end. He made that Cleopatra movie. That was a freaking, beast of a movie. He could totally do it. And let's get it in space. I'm ready. It's all about E.V.E. coming soon.
The other thing I want to note is Daryl F. Zanuck, the producer of All About Eve. They mention a producer in the movie as Zanuck.
Oh.
I don't know if you noticed that, but they're like, that producer Zanuck, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute, that's the real producer of this movie. Like, how'd they get? Was he cool with that? I wonder.
I don't know how they used to do that stuff. Like, they one of the things that bums me out about early Hollywood, it's very rare to find bloopers and like outtakes because they didn't keep them and
they covered that stuff up. Yeah.
Sure, they'd throw them away, they'd burn them, or they would work really hard to never have them because film is valuable and blah blah blah.
Yeah, right.
So. It bums me out, and I wish there was more of that. I wish there was more the ability to sort of laugh at yourself, and it's okay. It's not that big a deal, and now I think it's embraced, and certainly it's a lot cheaper to have a bunch of B-roll. But also, it makes me a little sad that stuff didn't exist. But also, the levity of saying, hey, our producer's called Zanuck. Let's put him in. Ha, ha, ha. That's funny, because it's a reference. Get it? Like, it feels like they were all so afraid of that stuff back then. Everybody was so prim and proper and careful in early Hollywood and, major studios owned by big juggernaut cigar smoking guys and nobody did anything without anyone's permission. It just feels like a much more sterile environment to work in than now.
you know, we talked about how there really wasn't any drama on the set, et cetera. One thing that I had forgotten is that Bette Davis' role was given to Claudette Colbert, but she had an injury before filming. It wasn't something that happened in the filming, but she had to pull out because of an injury. So they were going to give it to Ingrid Bergman, but instead, Bette Davis kind of grabbed it. She's like, this is a great role. I haven't had some successful movies lately. And she changed Margot from being a more genteel and knowingly humorous character to the more abrasive one. Ooh. I wonder if that change affected your appreciation.
Maybe it's possible. I'm looking at her filmography. I'd never heard of her before.
Well, who, Claudette Colbert?
Yeah. I don't know why that name's never, I've never heard that name. Oh, oh, she was in a ton of stuff. Yeah. Lived to 92. Anyway, she wouldn't have been in this either because she died in 96. I'm in my edit, I mean. But
she was in the title role of Cleopatra in 1934.
Oh, yeah. So I have seen her. Just didn't know that was her. Yeah. I think Cleopatra is awesome. I'm really hoping that's in this, in our list for some reason. I hope it ends up in there. But if it's not, it's okay. But that's interesting. Does it say what kind of injury she had? Like, what kind of injury?
No, I couldn't find that.
I was hoping it was like a... I'm not hoping it was anything, but, you know, she could be in, like, traction or something. You know, I can't do it. My leg's up. You'll have to have her do it. She's ready for her
close-up. Would be more humorous about it, knowingly humorous.
Yes. That is the only other thing.
No, Cleopatra is not on the list.
It's too bad. Maybe I'll watch it just because. We always talk about famous lines and, you know, stuff that goes out of these movies.
Mm.
It's going to be a bumpy night. That whole thing I played at the top of the show. That's the only one I think that is the big notable one, right? Are there any other?
It's huge, right?
Yeah.
Like freaking Harry Potter parodies it, you know.
Everyone
says
it.
Hang on, it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Yeah. Everybody references it. It feels like it's, as soon as I heard it, I went, oh my gosh, that's a big one. But I think it's
It's not famous, I loved the line, it's about time the piano realized it has not written the concerto.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. And that's so Bette Davis, it's almost painful. Well, there you go, folks.
And there's some good advice from Addison DeWitt to Eve Harrington when he says, you need to shed some of your humility. It's just as false not to blow your horn at all as it is to blow it too loudly.
These are words to live by, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm going to now live by them. That's going to do it for the show. Hey, look, we love these. We love doing them. And I'm so excited because we get to continue a series next month with The Godfather Part 2.
Oh, my. Yeah, Robert De Niro. Bob De Niro shows up.
Holy crap, dude. Wasn't the story, well, I guess we'll get it when we get it, but I think the story is that he and Pacino never showed up in the same scene together in that movie, even though they're in the same movie together. But I don't think they ever share a scene, and that became kind of infamous, and they're like, one of these two juggernauts of acting going to get together, and it wouldn't be until 1994's bank heist film from Michael Mann, Heat, that they would actually share a scene together, which is kind of great. So, anyway.
Well, yeah, because De Niro plays the young godfather in flashback scenes.
Right.
So Pacino isn't an adult.
There's no time travel as far as I know in Godfather Part 2.
The Time Father is a whole different.
Now, again, a movie I would watch. I would totally get into The Time Father Part 1 and 2 and 3, if you please.
It's kind of a cheap Doctor Who.
Yeah, totally. So that's The Godfather Part 2. That's coming next month right here on the Film Sack. Current Geek. See, these two shows, they are very similar. But one focuses on good, the other sometimes not so much. Anyway, it is the Current Geek Film Festival, and next month it'll be Godfather Part 2. Before we go, though, note that Legal Geek, rather, is here again this week. He's going to talk about the Top Secret Patent System, a review of classified patents under the USPTO security orders, or rather secrecy orders. Yep.
Yeah.
That should be fun. Right. He's always got something cool to say, so stick around for Legal Geek right after this. A reminder that if you like our show and you want to support it, there's one great way to do it. That is to head on over to patreon.com/currentgeek and give today. A lot of people have, and those who haven't, consider it. It's a great way to support the show, and we love you for it. Tom, before we go, anything you would like to mention?
Yeah, you know, I do a bunch of other shows. One called Cord Killers, I mentioned earlier, about movies and TV shows. And thanks to Adam Christensen, I've got a brand new website that brings them all together. It launched while we were recording this episode.
Wow.
So go check it out, TomMerritt.com, the all-new TomMerritt.com.
Oh, that's awesome. I love him, too. So it's great to hear he's working on that. But there's lots of other cool stuff happening on the website, currentgeek.com. And the reason I say that is because when you go there, you'll be able to link off to everything else happening on Frog Pants at frogpants.com. And you might find other shows you like and the whatnot while you go there. Don't forget, if you want to get more of this show, you can follow us on Twitter at Current Geek. You can find us at currentgeek.com. You can follow Tom at Ace Detect, me at Scott Johnson. And you can leave us voicemail or emails, rather, over at the site. Just head on over to currentgeek.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, for everyone else. We'll see you next time.